Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim.
Everybody, welcome to the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim. I'm Molly.
And I'm Kim.
And we are just so excited to be here with you. It is our first day with KDMT, 1690 AM, Denver's Money Talks Radio. We're psyched to be here.
We really are. We're going to be Monday through Friday, and it's going to just go by really quickly. So whether or not you're in a carpool, going home from work, cooking dinner, be sure and tune in to the AmeriChicks.
Yeah, and we would love to hear from you. We want to hear what you have to say. Our entire thing is we look at issues that we think should be on that important person's radar. We know you may not have time to watch the news all day. I mean, very few of us do, and if you do, it might drive you crazy anyway. So tune in to us. We're going to pull out what we think should be on your radar. We're going to dissect it as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Because, you know what, all issues belong to all of us. And together we can come up with solutions together. We want to hear your solutions. Call us as we're talking about these issues and let us know what solutions you recommend that have nothing at all to do with the government's heavy hand. The number is 303-632-4160.
Yep. And we are the AmeriChicks at Gmail. And check out our website, AmeriChicks.com. We just we worked with Brandon, one of our sponsors, and he has just put together a new beautiful website. So be sure and check that out.
Yep. That's mydesi.com. So check him out as well. So let's get into it. First of all, I'm kind of happy that our first Monday is right after Super Bowl Sunday. Although I've got to say, I think in the future we should have a new rule. Super Bowl needs to be Super Bowl Saturday so that we can rest on Sunday. What do you think?
That's an excellent idea.
All right. Sounds good to me.
Or everybody takes Monday off.
Yeah. Make it a holiday.
Yeah.
Super Bowl Monday holiday.
Yeah.
Recovery.
Yeah.
Party. So what do you think about the Super Bowl?
Well, I thought it was inspiring. I like the Patriots, but I kind of wanted Atlanta to win. But I tell you what happened coming back, it was pretty amazing. It reminds me of Winston Churchill. Never, 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 never give up.
Oh, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's what I was thinking. There were a lot of records being broken last night, for sure. You've got Bill Belichick and, you know, it was the first, you know, the five wins. I mean, they got five
That's
wins
pretty awesome.
Super Bowl together, which is totally great. Tom Brady as well. I guess maybe it's that paleo diet.
Oh, maybe I need to go on that. Maybe I could win a Super Bowl.
Maybe you could. I don't know. But yeah, the comeback was amazing. Everybody had pretty much given up. And then the overtime. So this is the first time in the history of the Super Bowl that they had overtime, which was pretty cool. And I know that you think there shouldn't be.
I think that that is really
dumb. Rules in
the overtime. That both teams don't get a chance.
They both got a chance. They got to flip a coin.
Well, yeah, but maybe if you had 15 minutes, but it can't be like sudden death. I just don't think that's fair.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Atlanta should have had a chance.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They did. It was called a coin toss. They called the wrong way. That's the way it goes. Sorry.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
You are cruel.
Hey, you get one chance in life. Sometimes you don't even get that many. So do it.
When the train goes by in the station, you better get on.
Exactly.
Huh? Okay.
All right. Real quick. Lady Gaga, what do you think?
I thought it was okay.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know everybody thought it was great, but I don't know. It didn't really turn my crank.
Well, I think it was really great because I'm pretty much comparing it to Super Bowls past and to the wardrobe malfunctions, Black Panther salute that took place last year, all that kind of stuff. And then so many people were building up that there was going to be this whole big political deal that she was going to do. And I was really excited that she didn't because, you know, there's been enough division. There's been enough of that. There's been enough of our football players taking a knee during the national anthem and kind of disrespecting what this country stands for and the freedom that they're allowed by those few that sacrifice so much for us that I thought it was really cool that she didn't get into the politics.
Well, that is good.
You know, and she has great songs. She had a lot of really, really great songs, and she was jumping out of the sky. She was flying around. She had her her shoulder pads on and glitter. I thought it was good.
So. I remember the old days when there were marching bands.
Yes, I know. I think you were in one, weren't you, Kim?
I was in a halftime of a Super Bowl, and I'm not going to tell you which year, because then you'll start to do the math and figure out how old I am.
Mm-hmm. But if we look on your Facebook and we see you in a curly wig with a short green skirt, we'll know. Yeah, check it out. Do the math. Kim Munson. All right, moving on. So speaking of records, looks like Donald Trump has been smashing some records.
I must say, you know, Molly, you and I were back at the inauguration, and before he even went to any of the balls, he got to work, which was kind of amazing. And people in Washington aren't used to this.
Right.
I think Americans aren't used to this.
Yeah. What's hard for us? I'm trying to make notes. I'm trying to keep up. Like, what's going on? What do I need to take notes on? And I can't even keep up with this guy. I mean, I don't know. Does he not golf? He has golf courses. Why doesn't he play some golf?
That's a good question.
But anyway, I'm happy. I am happy that he is getting to work, because there's a lot to do in this country. And there are people that want to hurt us. And there are a lot of, you know, people that are looking for a job. A lot of people that are hoping that the economy gets better. And they're hoping that Donald Trump actually does something to help us. And in this second segment, we're going to get into a little bit more of Donald Trump's possible economic solutions. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be different than the kind of solutions other presidents have put down the pipe in the past. And I think they're going to be good for us. So we'll get into that with Dr. Brian Dmytrovic.
Very excited.
But before that, and that's in the second segment, we've got a couple more minutes real quick. What else is on your radar, Kim?
Well, I think we need to do something about Nordstrom's pulling Ivanka Trump's collection. When we're starting to have different businesses that are capitulating to political bullying, I think that we need to stand up to that. So when I got home on Friday, I did call Nordstrom's customer service. I love Nordstrom's. I have a lot of friends that work at Nordstrom's. However, unless they put Ivanka Trump's collection back in their stores, I'm not sure that I'm going to go back. But I buy these great shoes that I have on, mm-hmm, that you can't see right now.
They're sexy. Yeah. Red and black.
Yeah. I got those at Nordstrom's. I get my makeup. I've gotten gifts. And I think they'll miss me. And so I've talked to a number of friends. And we're going to do something about it.
Well, that sounds good. I actually have an Ivanka Trump jacket.
I love that.
I thought it was beautiful. It was glamorous. Actually, I bought it before Trump was my, you know, but he was just one of 17 at that point. This, you know, last year, and I was like, I needed a new coat. It was gorgeous. I was like, I don't know. And I was kind of funny about it, but I was like, you know what? Whatever. I'm going to buy what looks good on me. And that, you know, that's the point, right?
It's a great little jacket.
So, you know what? We vote. Nordstrom has every right, if they want, to pull her stuff, and they're going to feel the effects of that either positively or negatively.
Certainly,
that's
Molly,
the way
they can.
Free market works. We
but
want it to work.
Political bullying is what we're talking about here.
True. But so, since we would prefer that Nordstrom keep covering Trump and all of their wonderful fashions that we've grown to know and love all the time, we want to say, please rethink this. And women and men out there, if you're against this, write them, email them, Facebook them, hashtag I am a movement, and tell them, don't get into the politics, let the free market decide. Right? All right. So this is the Americhicks, Molly and Kim, and we will be right back. We're going to be talking to Dr. Brian Dmytrovic.
Water's Edge Winery is a craft winery located in the heart of Centennial. Locally owned, Chad and Jennifer are currently making more than 30 international varietals with very low sulfites with you in mind. Drop in anytime to watch the winemaker at work or experience a wine tasting. Sample some of their delicious meats and cheeses or chocolates. So grab your girlfriends, bring your book club, celebrate any occasion in their tasting room. Water's Edge Winery is located across from the streets at South Glen and Centennial. Call them today, 720-381-6663. Website is wewdenver.com, and we'll see you at the Water's Edge Winery, your new happy place.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Americhicks, Molly and Kim. I'm Molly.
And I'm Kim.
And you know what? We just love Kid Rock. We were all born free. And in America, we're protected. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
So you love my song?
I do.
All right, cool. So moving on. We've got a new sheriff in town with President Trump. And over the past few years, Kim and I, you know, we've been talking a lot about, here's what we think that the government should do or shouldn't do to get out of our way so that we can get our wallets padded again, get them out there, get our nest eggs built and grown, and just, you know, get back to prosperity again. America is the land of opportunity, and we should all be prosperous in America. If we're all treated fairly by government rules and regulations, and if government rules and regulations do what they're supposed to do and they're not too big, we should all be financially stable, right?
Mm-hmm. A vibrant middle class is critical to a society which allows people to go after their hopes and dreams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about getting the government out of the way. And now we actually have a chance to do that. And somebody who has kind of been on the inside and had the opportunity to bend the ear of President-elect Trump at the time, now President Trump, he was able to kind of bend the ear and give some suggestions. We thought we'd invite on and share his ideas with us, his solutions with us, and give us some examples of presidents that perhaps may have tried this method before and it worked. So, Dr. Brian Dmytrovic, welcome to Heart of the Matter.
It's great to be here, Molly and Kim.
Well, Brian, you are on our inaugural show on KDMT 1690, and we are just honored to have you here.
No, congratulations, you two. I mean, this is a real big deal. And, you know, drive time is going to mean a lot because so many more people are going to be at work. They're going to be driving at drive time. So that's what's going to happen in this new prosperity.
Good, good. And you know what? We want them to know the right solutions, right? I mean, they're like, okay, it's time for a change. What should there be? And we think it's time for some real honest, calm, respectful, but serious debate and discussion. And we want to come up with positive solutions. And you have some really amazing solutions that we wanted to share with people. So real quick, just before we get going, Dr. Brian Dmitrovic, he is co-authored many books. One recently, his book is JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. He wrote with Larry Kudlow. You can also see his articles on Forbes. Mm-hmm. And he was just this past year, he was the residing scholar here at CU.
Conservative Thought and Policy.
Boulder. Right. So we got the opportunity to meet him and just thought he had some really great ideas. So real quick, Brian, you have talked about how we're so divided now, and we've seen kind of the Occupy Wall Streeters, we've seen the anti-one percenters, we've seen the class warfare and the division back and forth, and people who have said, you know, you've got this big house, and so, you know, you got that on the back of somebody else, and the pie is just not big enough for all of us. But you said, and this, you said this a few months ago to Kim and I. You said, if we look back 20 to 30 years ago to the 80s and the 90s, you'll see there was no class warfare. There wasn't any of this. Everybody was optimistic. And the reason is because of economic growth. You said every single problem that we face today, we could get rid of if we get this economy growing again. Is that right?
Absolutely, it's right. I mean, that's the lesson of history. The greatest contribution that America has made. Now, you can talk about our political freedoms and civil rights. Those are tremendous contributions. But economic growth, I mean, without it, would we have ever had the mass middle class? Would we have ever had the confidence to go ahead with the civil rights revolution? Would our political freedoms really have the taste that they have in our mouths, that they're great things, if we were all dirt poor and didn't have opportunity? Economic growth is something that the United States has done better than any country in world history by far. So if our emphasis is on that today, we should be very confident that the social divisions and cultural divisions that plague us today will start to dissipate as they always have.
Well, Brian, the economic numbers for the last year have been somewhat dismal, even though the rhetoric throughout the campaign, you know, has been that, you know, we want to get people back to work and you know, the actual results have been different than what people were saying. So if I remember right, it's about 1.9%. For the last quarter, is that right? Or
yeah, absolutely. Growth has been about 2%, and it was 1.9% for the last quarter. What does that mean in kind of real terms? The United States has never had a 10-year period of less than 3% economic growth per year until 2007 happened. And now we've had a 10-year period where every single year has come below 3%. I mean, the population grows at about 1% per year. And so if you have 2 or 3 or 4 or 5% growth per year, and that's what we had in the 1950s and that's what we had in the 1960s, the 1980s, the 1990s, you see phenomenal increases in the standard of living. People start to chill out about being divisive. They get excited about starting new businesses instead of demonstrating in the streets. So we really, I think, have no bar to aspiring to doubling our rate of economic growth.
Well, Brian, your new book, JFK and the Reagan Revolution, you know, JFK was a Democrat, Reagan was a Republican. So what did they have in common?
Sure. Yeah, this is a book I wrote with Larry Kudlow, the great CNBC contributor and official in the Reagan administration and close informal advisor of Donald Trump's. And Donald Trump has cuddled our book in his hands and he has read it, I understand, in preparation for his inaugural address. As we talk about Kennedy's inaugural address a bit, John F. Kennedy faced an economy that had just gone through 4 recessions in 11 years. We often think of the 50s as really this great time economically, but that's when the top income tax rate was all the way up over 90%. And it was just a recipe for constant recessions and kind of slow growth. And he said, I'm going to cut tax rates and get the dollar strong against gold again, the gold standard. And when he did that, there was a 9-year boom at 5% economic growth. And we just had a tripling, a quadrupling of the rate of job growth. And why don't we do that again? Reagan did it in the 1980s, emulating Kennedy.
Well, Brian, there are those that would say that that's very selfish for America to prosper.
Yeah. Well, we can be pretty ecumenical about it, because one thing we have noticed over the years is when the United States really gets its act together economically, other countries give us the sincerest form of flattery. They imitate us.
I love it.
They lower their tax rates. We've seen that on the corporate side in particular. The United States slashed tax rates in the 1980s, and everyone lowered their corporate tax rate. Then the United States crept up theirs, and everyone didn't say, we're going to imitate you now. They kept their corporate tax rates low, and that's why so much investment capital has flown out of this country to the tremendous detriment of jobs. So no. Foreign countries actually love it when we do this, because they prove it by imitating us.
Okay. Well, let's go through an example. Let's start with JFK, if you don't mind. Tell us what you talked about, the 90% tax rate on income taxes. What about corporate and all of the rest of those? What did the rest of that look like? And then what exactly did he move those down to?
You know, what an interesting, weird tax code it was back in the 1950s. The corporate tax rate was 52%, and it's, 35% today. The top tax rate was 100 minus 9, 91% on income tax. And the capital gains rate was way down at 25%. It's about the same today. So what that meant is it was a situation that was ripe for inequality. So all sorts of corporate insiders and lobbyists would get special exemptions written into the tax code to make sure that somebody who had high income, a particular person, didn't have to pay the 91% rate. You could either pay the 25% rate or nothing. So the rates were just a bunch of paper rates. And then there was all this influence peddling in Washington while people diverted their capital, who were rich, into these unproductive but tax-free enterprises. And what it led to was just a stifling of job growth. Job growth was a crawl. There were recessions every 18 months. And Kennedy said, this isn't the way America is supposed to be. And he said, let's just cut those tax rates by 30% across the board. And sure enough, the economy took off.
Well, Brian, when government gets into the habit of picking winners and losers, which is totally antithetical to the vision of the Declaration that all men are created equal and should be able to go after their life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. But when you get bureaucrats starting to say, I think of economic development deals where, different city councils may try to give a special deal to entice a business to come in. Well, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to realize that if lower taxes are good for that big business to come in, then it's also good for the little guy. And it's not fair that the pizza parlor guy has to pay all the taxes and the big guy gets the break.
Kim, that is so true. The one thing that Larry and I learned in our research, and I think actually it was the single most valuable lesson we learned about studying tax policy, economic policy of the presidents from the 50s to the present, was that when you have regulations, extensive regulations, when you have Keynesian economics, when you have high tax rates, when you have pork barrel government spending, every single one of those things increases the value of having influence in Washington. A high tax rate is much more valuable to be exempt from than a low tax rate. Same thing with regulations. It's a lot more valuable to get an exemption from those regulations when they're extensive and everyone else has to deal with it. So that's one of the beautiful egalitarian benefits. And I do wish our friends on the left would start to embrace this point. It's one of the greatest things we can do for equality is to lower tax rates and therefore exemptions to taxation and lower regulation. We'll have the free flow of capital, no cronyism, and plenty of jobs.
Well, and that's great for our millennials. I see this next generation. I really see a lot of greatness in this generation. But I hear frustrations when these young people want to try to start their business. And I think your point that big guys are able to get around those regulations, where the little guys, they're just kind of stifled because they don't know what to do.
Yeah, when you have the highest corporate tax rate in the world, we should really stop asking, scratching our heads. Geez, I wonder why newbies are having trouble starting businesses in this country. And when the regulatory establishment exploded, as it did in the Obama years, written in many cases with cronies in Washington who worked for the drug companies and so forth. When you have all that going on, we know what the problem is. And so it's funny that we kind of roll our eyes at millennials while kind of understanding that it's the older inside players who have kind of stacked this system. And that's why it would be great if we could just go back to our halcyon supply side of presidents, Kennedy and Reagan, who just said, well, let's just clear all that out and let's let these many flowers bloom.
So under JFK, What did he, you said he cut everything at the same time. Did he stagger them? What was first? What's the most important to do first?
Yeah, so Kennedy took a little while to figure this out. Now, of course, he was a Democrat back then. But the funny thing is the Democrats understood much better then than they do today that it's very important to cut the top rate of the income tax, because if you don't, the rich will take advantage of it with their exemptions. He understood that much better than Democrats today. But he took a little while. So he listened to his academic advisors, the Keynesians, who said, spend money, don't cut tax rates. But when he did that, the stock market fell by 28%. So he turned on his heels and just said, okay, let's cut tax rates 30% at the top, 30% at the bottom, and about 22% in between. As soon as he made that announcement, all he had to do was make the announcement in the summer of 1962. Stock market hit an all-time floor. Growth was 5% for the next 8 years, and he came through with his legislation the next year.
Sounds like deja vu on what's just happened to us in the past month.
Deja vu all over again.
Yeah, yeah, deja vu. Oh, my gosh, you're great, Kim. Okay, so one more minute, then we're going to go to a quick commercial. So let's just talk about, what did the next president after JFK do? Did he keep it going the same way?
Well, LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, did sign the Kennedy tax cut. Kennedy got it through the first house of the House, and then he was shot and killed. And then LBJ got it through the Senate immediately, and then he signed it into law. So, okay, that all took place in 1964, just a few months after the assassination. But Lyndon Johnson didn't have any clue what Kennedy was doing, and he was quickly conned by the left-wing academic advisors who had been spurned during the Kennedy administration. They said, oh, Kennedy didn't have his heart in this. Oh, no, he really went to do spending. And so then Johnson increased spending stratospherically while he adopted an income,
hey,
income tax surcharge.
Brian, let's go to break. I've got a question when we come back.
Okay. All right, stick with us.
Home is where the heart is. It's that safe place where memories are made, meals shared, and holidays celebrated. When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you need to work with RE/MAX award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 28 years. Karen is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Karen takes the time to understand your unique wants and needs and can help you make the best decision for you and your family. Give Karen Levine a call at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation, or visit her online at KarenLevine@remax.net and tell her the Americhicks sent you. Every business needs great branding, an effective website, professional photography, and videos to promote their products and services. Normally, businesses have to find numerous providers to handle all this work while incurring substantial costs. That's where Desi On Demand comes in. You choose your budget, and you choose your services from Desi On Demand's menu. Kim Munson here. Molly and I heartily endorse the creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity that Brand and the founder of Desi and his team bring to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com, that's D-E-Z-I, or call 303-359-1255 and tell them the Americhicks sent you.
I got this feeling inside my bones.
Hey, welcome back to Heart of the Matter with the Americhicks, Molly and Kim. I am Kim.
I'm Molly.
Yeah, and we're talking with Dr. Brian Dimitrovic. He is an economist. He's his most recent book is JFK and the Reagan Revolution. And Brian, while we were at break, Molly was expounding on the question that she had asked you. JFK had lower tax rates. She asked about what happened with Lyndon Johnson. You said Lyndon Johnson had no clue what was going on. But what happened in between JFK and Reagan?
Yeah, that's when we had the stagflation period, this strange simultaneous skyrocketing in both unemployment and inflation with double-dip recessions and a big problem. And it was because we didn't have money on gold and we didn't have tax rate cuts. Reagan then came in 1980 and said, let's do what John F. Kennedy did. Let's stabilize the dollar against gold, get big tax rate cuts, boom, stagflation was gone.
Well, and very quickly, you have, I think it's five different pillars that we should adhere to really get this economy going again. Could you just tell us what those are quickly?
Yeah, the great economist Arthur Laffer, advisor to Reagan, said there are five pillars of Reaganomics: low tax rates, low spending, spare regulation, free trade, and sound money. You do those five things, your economy will roar.
Just a quick question. Free trade. I like a lot of the things that President Trump is doing. However, I'm struggling a little bit with this whole trade thing. What would your comment be on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's tricky. I mean, one from the perspective of doing deals, right, you want to make sure the deals are good. I mean, if we have NAFTA or whatever with Mexico and so forth with China, you want to make sure you're not kind of getting the shaft. But the thing is, the United States really should be counting on, focusing on, is making sure that it's the costs that the government imposes on our own domestic businesses are as low as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We have to cut the corporate rate and we have to cut regulations if we want to have any hope of being competitive internationally. We can't have those high rates and we can't have regulations and then blame international trade for our woes.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like making America competitive with everybody else again.
You bet.
Okay. So we talked about JFK. Let's talk about Reagan. One was a Democrat, one was a Republican, but they both did similar things that you and Larry Kudlow and the team are recommending Donald Trump do to get our economy going again. So let's talk about Reagan. What was the situation when he took office? What was the unemployment? What did the tax rates look like? What was all that? And then what changes did he make and what happened?
Yeah, in 1980, when Ronald Reagan ran for and won the presidency, something called the Misery Index was at 21. The Misery Index was this weird creature of the 1970s where they added up the inflation rate and the unemployment rate. And at that point, it was 21. So you had an 8% unemployment rate and a 13% inflation rate.
That hurts.
That's crazy.
Ouch.
Yeah. I mean, all this, tens of, 8, 10, 12 million people unemployed and prices going up 15% a year. And that had been going on for 10, 12 years. Reagan came in, said, told the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, let's just watch the private price of gold. Gold got stabilized against the dollar. No more inflation. Let's cut tax rates big time. That happened. So you had a collapse in the inflation rate, a collapse in the unemployment rate, and a big surge in the growth rate. And that it was just a beautiful scenario that we should aspire to do again today.
Okay. So talk a little bit about the Laffer curve, if you don't mind. Explain the Laffer curve, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. Arthur Laffer, an advisor to Ronald Reagan, at this point a very good friend of mine. I work with him a lot these days. It's really the most famous economics graph of the 20th century. Many people recognize it. It simply says that at a certain point, you can raise tax rates 50, 60, 70%, and the total tax revenue that will come from higher rates will be lower than if you cut tax rates. If you cut tax rates, the revenue would be higher. And Laffer talked a lot about this in the 1970s, and we've seen that rule come into effect over the last 30 years.
Well, Brian, and really with the Laffer curve, to bring it home to an individual, let's say you have a small business person, and they put in a lot of hours, 60, 70 hours sometimes a week to make those businesses grow. And there is at a point that when the government starts to take X amount of dollars, which I think you say is probably the top of the Laffer curve, that small business person says, there's no reason for me to be away from my family and work this hard because the government is taking so much of my hard-earned dollars. And at least that's the way I've always kind of understood the Laffer curve.
Absolutely. If you look in these confiscatory states like California or New York or Illinois, you're talking about marginal tax rates for fairly modest personal income, maybe $200,000, 55% if you add it onto the federal rate. So, right. I mean, if you want to have that 50th, that 60th hour of work that brings in extra income, you're talking about giving all of it minus 35% or a little bit more to the government. And that is a real disincentive to growth. And that's the kind of thing that where there's a lot of power in cutting tax rates. When you cut those tax rates and cut those regulations, then you see surges of new activity because it's so valuable.
Well, and ultimately that helps out millennials because that small business person now will maybe work, five more hours a week because they know that they're going to be able to keep, the fruits of their labor. Instead of calling that greedy, we're calling them able to create wealth. And in doing so, they know that they need to hire people to help them do that. So as you say, lower tax rates, lower rules, regulations. I mean, I think we get this done. I think it'll be exciting what happens in America.
Kim, that is the messaging that would just be so great if it could be done with the millennials. Like in Boulder last year when I was in Boulder, there were, of course, so many students came out and young people for Bernie Sanders. And so much of their understanding of cronyism actually has a foundation, right? When you have these high tax rates and regulations, there's a lot of cronyism. So they actually can make common cause with these free market solutions. And if we do put them into practice in this new administration, I think we will see the millennials just surging into the real economy.
Well, let's talk about where we are now in the economy today, what we're looking at. We hear some news reports say that we're at an all-time low for unemployment. That looks good. Of course, they're not talking about the job participation rate. And people are suggesting that we need to have the government spend more money. President Obama, former President Obama, had a big stimulus he put into place. Some people are saying we need the government to spend more. Other people are saying we need to cut taxes. What exactly, can you just tell our listeners, where is our economy for real right now? What are we looking at? And then what do you suggest that Donald Trump do first?
Well, Donald Trump was perfectly justified during the campaign for holding up this so-called unemployment rate as being a phony. And I have said this personally, in fact, with testimony with the Federal Reserve Chair, Janet Yellen. I mean, the idea that we have a 4.6% unemployment rate in this country, which is the official number, is ridiculous. That does not count upwards of 10 million people who have given up on searching for work because conditions have been so bad for 8-9 years. The real unemployment rate is really something like 10%.
That's absolutely crazy how you don't count people as not working because they've given up looking for work because it's so hopeless, because nobody out there, the business owners, don't feel like they can take the risk.
So, Molly, I think you're saying that those unemployment numbers were faux news?
Faux news.
Yeah, or fake news.
There you go. All right.
It's French if it's faux news, and it's English if it's fake
news.
Well,
you would know. Oui, oui. So what would be the best thing for Donald Trump to do first? Should he cut corporate taxes? Does he cut the tax rate on the most wealthy individuals? I mean, where does he start?
Yeah, my co-author, Larry Kudlow, thinks the highest priority should be on that corporate tax rate. And I do understand that argument. I endorse it. Our corporate tax rate, really, if you average the state rates, is about 39%.
Whoa.
If you took that down to 20 or 15%, here's the Laffer-Curve in action. You would see probably an increase in revenue. The revenue from the corporate tax is now very small because there's been so much offshoring. So you would see all sorts of businesses repatriate their holdings back into the United States. I think that would have the biggest pop. Then Obamacare itself is a tax hike in drag.
I mean,
that's really what that thing is. So you've got to just do a lot of repealing of Obamacare, however complex that is. Do the regulatory stuff and then make sure, and I'm worried that this isn't going to happen, you do cut those personal rates.
Well, you know, Brian, I think the radical left doesn't understand, and you know, I think through the education system, and thank you for what you do, but I don't think that a lot of people understand that if you make the pie a lot bigger, you can take a smaller percentage and more people are prospering. And as you say, they start to not worry about all of these divisive problems because they're prospering and succeeding.
This is one of the things that Larry and I talked about in the book. It's one of the reasons we wrote the book is because it's been so long now, a period of stagnation, that we've had a whole new young generation that has grown up without the economic pie growing. And so they actually need to learn, oh, when the economic pie grows, we all do well. That's one of the reasons it's so important to get it done. So it has a certain educational effect. Young people begin to realize, oh, you mean like we can have mass prosperity? Everyone can do really well in this country. The American dream is not just something we read about in faraway textbooks. They can have it in their bones, their lived experience. So that's why it's really imperative to get this done now for the next generation.
Love it.
Totally agree. Real quick, we've only got one more minute, but I got a question for you. President Obama is telling the government to do a review of Dodd-Frank. Is that good or bad for the small guys?
The Dodd-Frank, the Banking Act, was a giveaway to the banking insiders of the country. So it would be very beneficial for there to be a review. I mean, the number of banks in this country has just dropped precipitously since over the last 8-10 years. And we need a reinvigoration of lending, especially if there's going to be tax rate cuts, because people are going to go out there and say, hey, regulatory cuts, hey, let's do things now. So, you know, we need more banking, and a repeal or a modification of Dodd-Frank would give us that.
Brian Dmitrovic, we are running out of time. Your book, JFK and the Reagan Revolution, that you've written with Larry Kudlow, we've got to have you back soon. And thank you so much for being our inaugural guest on our new venture on Drive Time Radio.
Given Molly, it was a distinct honor. You guys are doing great.
Thanks so much. We appreciate you, Brian. Kim, I think it's awesome, and this is exactly what we want people to know, is the economic pie is not a finite pie. It is not limited. If we get the government out of the way, we get the regulations out of the way, we get these extra taxes out of the way, get the handcuffs off, everybody can be successful. Everybody can be prosperous. And we want to make sure that everybody understands that. And that's why we do the show. We want to educate everybody. And let's come up with solutions. If you have any other ideas, let us know. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
It's complicated. Life, sometimes. Bookkeeping, sometimes. Taxes, all the stinking time. That's why you need to work with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. They offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company takes a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs. Tax day is right around the corner, so call the pros at Predovich & Company today. 303-791-3000 or check out the website at dpredovich.com. And be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back to Heart of the Matter with the Americhicks, Molly and Kim. And I am Kim.
I'm Molly.
Yep. Great interview there. And I am excited about this next interview. We have Jeff Blue in studio with us. He is an attorney with Kalinda Gessler and Blue. And he has actually been a deputy state attorney, right?
Attorney General.
Okay.
Under Southers.
And so, Jeff, it's really great to have you here. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know,
especially on your first night.
I know. It's our, you're our very...
We invited our best friends in.
Yeah, our second guest. So we really appreciate you being here.
My pleasure.
But there's a lot going on. And in fact, Boulder County is taking some legal action over oil and gas. So, you know, what's going on with that?
Well, it's actually, what they've done is they've done a moratorium on fracking in... Is it Broomfield or Boulder?
Boulder.
It is Boulder County. And the question is whether that's legal, whether they can actually regulate fracking in their county or whether the state regulations preempt that regulation. And frankly, the Supreme Court's already addressed this before.
Okay. So what's happening?
The previous case was Longmont. The Longmont voters passed an amendment to their home rule charter where they banned fracking within the city limits. The Colorado Oil and Gas Association sued, and then a bunch of environmental organizations joined in on Longmont side. A bunch of pro-oil and gas organizations joined in on the other side. And the state actually weighed in on behalf of the oil and gas industry through the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
Okay.
And Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman was the represented them in that. And so the Supreme Court had to address whether Longmont is allowed to actually ban fracking, to actually regulate fracking in their and within their city limits. And they ultimately decided that they were not allowed to do so.
And what was the Supreme Court's reasoning on that?
It's a convoluted reasoning, but basically what it comes down to is because of once you get to the issue of whether it's a express preemption or implied preemption, this one was what they called operational. And the real question comes down to is, does the Longmont regulation conflict with the state regulations of the issue? And they determined it did. And the reason they did so is because the Supreme Court found that the state has a strong interest in the efficient and responsible development of oil and gas resources. And I'm quoting now from the language. And it includes a strong interest in the uniform regulation of fracking. And then... Then they found that the problem was that Longmont's law prevented any fracking there, which basically rendered those rules moot in that city. And so, therefore, it was preempted by state law.
Now, Jeff, I think you know I had served for 4 years on City Council of Lone Tree. And interestingly enough, within the first couple of months when I was on City Council, we had a presentation made by county staff regarding potential memorandum of understanding regarding oil and gas. And even though being, you know, a rookie city council person, as I really looked at it kind of from a 30,000 foot view, is when we look at the purpose of government, ultimately the Constitution and the Declaration, in America, private property rights are something that is to be protected. And so with mineral rights, there are thousands of individuals that own those mineral rights. And so when a municipality comes in and puts in a moratorium on fracking, that seems to me like that bumps up against property rights.
It does. And in the Longmont case, I actually did not address that because it was purely on the preemption grounds that they were addressing. And it was not brought by... residents of Longmont who might have had mineral rights that they could actually exploit. But the kind of...
And when you say exploit, you mean that in a good term,
sorry,
right?
I apologize. The term exploit is a technical term in the sense of to use.
Okay.
But to use the minerals and that their mineral rights govern. And what you're talking about is called a regulatory taking. And there's a constitutional strain that talks about takings where if the government takes your property, they have to pay you for it. And they have to pay you a right amount. And... they over the years, they have allowed regulations to the extent that they modify what you're allowed to do. But if they actually pass a regulation that prevents you from doing something that with your land, from doing anything with your land, that conceivably could be considered a regulatory taking. They would actually have to pay you for it. That issue hasn't come up in the oil and gas world in Colorado yet, but it is certainly something that an owner of mineral rights could raise if they are prohibited from fracking at all.
Okay.
So what are the options right now? If Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman sent a letter saying that she might take appropriate legal action against Boulder County because of this moratorium, what could she possibly do? What would that look like?
What I would expect if she decided to do anything, and she would probably do it on behalf of the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. So the Attorney General is the lawyer for the state. And typically she acts on behalf of a client, which would be a department or agency of the state. And the agency in this instance would be the commission. And she could bring an action in court to overturn the moratorium and basically to get a declaration from the courts that said that the moratorium is unconstitutional and it has to be rescinded. And so that's what I would expect her to do if she was going to do anything and do it on behalf of the commission. If the commission didn't want to join her in that, then we get into an interesting area of law where the attorney general, whether the attorney general is allowed to act on her behalf. And in Colorado, frankly, there is a long strain where the attorney general is allowed to do so. So she probably would be able to do the same thing on her own. But it would be a lot better also from a political standpoint. You have a Democratic governor, Hickenlooper, and it's the Oil and Gas Commission, which may be independent. I don't remember if it is or not. But essentially, it'd be better for her to do it for a client. But she could do it on her own, probably.
If she did it on her own, how much would that potentially cost taxpayers?
It's lawyer times, so it's her employees. So if you wanted to figure out how much it costs a taxpayer, you'd have to figure out how much time their lawyer spent on it and what was the opportunity cost, what else would they be working on. So mm-hmm. that's really what the issue would be mm-hmm. if they chose this versus something else.
Well, ultimately, what I see, Jeff, is that we have actually radical left environmental groups that are just trying to stop the oil and gas industry. I think all of us here believe that energy should be responsible, but affordable. And, so I'm very concerned about people that absolutely hate oil and gas. Instead of they haven't had success at the state level yet, although they keep trying, that now they're going to all of these different city councils and counties to try to put for their goals.
But that's one of the upsides that Castle Pines doesn't have any oil and gases. I don't have to deal with that as a city councilman. But you're right. And actually, part of the analysis in the Longmont case was the question of the ripple effect. And that is that if they succeed in Longmont, then they can basically succeed in overturning the Oil and Gas Commission's rules by doing a patchwork attack and attack each different municipality or county throughout the state and ban fracking. And if they are successful, conceivably, they could actually be successful in eliminating fracking throughout the state without doing it as a statewide basis, which is actually what the commission's meant to do.
Mm-hmm. I've actually seen another strategy with a different industry, and that is municipal broadband. Same kind of thing. We've had them going out and encouraging municipalities to say, we want to have broadband. But I don't think these municipalities quite understand the total cost. But again, it's been very, kind of targeted, very patchwork, as you say.
Yeah, and that's what they would do. I would have expected that. I mean, matter of fact, they are doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got Longmont, but they lost in court. Now they're trying it in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
who's next?
Yep.
Well, they're going to keep trying. What? Never give up. That's exactly it. You and Winston Churchill were so smart.
Tom Brady.
Right. Well, oh, gosh. Bill Belichick. Okay. So anyways, we've got to keep fighting. But I think it was pretty interesting that Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman came out and said that she was willing to fight them for that. So I think it's pretty good. I know a lot of people in the oil and gas industry and also landowners that really just want them to leave them alone and let them develop.
Affordable, efficient, and responsible energy.
Yeah.
That's our goal.
So let's keep up with that. Obviously, Broomfield is having this discussion right now. Mike Shelton is city council member. He's going to join us on Wednesday and talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get into that further, and we'd love to hear everybody's view on that. One more thing real quick before we close up from our very first day here at
KDMT. It's gone quickly.
It sure has. Trump's done a lot in his first 3 weeks. Kim and I have been going around talking to people about his contract with America in the first 100 days, what he said he was going to do. Some things we agree with, some things we kind of wish he'd go a different direction on. But the point is that we're talking to people and we're asking what you think and your solutions and how his decisions are going to affect you and your business and your family. We want to know so that we can give our ideas and our solutions to the president. Mm-hmm. And we are going to be doing a discussion on Thursday night at South Jeffco Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
In Littleton, and wanted to invite everybody to come on by and see us. So we'll be there after the show Thursday night.
Right. We will rush over there. We won't speed, but we'll rush over there. So
yeah, we'll speed. It's at the Church of All Nations.
Yeah. Littleton. And quick, Jeff Blue, thank you so much for being here, city councilman with Castle Pines. And Sarah Hatch, thank you for being here as well. She's been helping us on a variety of different projects. And so it's great to have you in studio. And we always like to end with a quote, something that somebody important said, and James Madison, I thought this was very important. He said, "It will be of little avail to the people that the laws are made by men of their own choice. If the laws are so voluminous that they cannot be read, or so incoherent that they cannot be understood." And when we look at what President Trump is doing to simplify things, I think that goes all the way back to James Madison, one of our founders.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Benjamin Franklin said that we've got a republic if we can keep it. And what do we need to keep it? We need a good, educated, and moral society. And the point is we need to keep having conversations. We want to invite everybody to the table again. Instead of the division and being angry and saying, you know, mean things to people on Facebook and Twitter all the time, or people that you've never met, someone you see in the streets, let's come together. Let's have a movement. Let's be the solution. We're inviting everybody to join us. Just have an honest, open-minded debate. Do your research.
Get, be civil.
Get the truth. Get the true facts. Search for that. And that's what we want to bring forward. And then let's sit down and have a conversation. Our founding fathers did it, and they did a good job. They obviously didn't agree on everything.
Yeah, I think the conversations were robust. However, we need to be civil with each other. And so that's one of the things that we, the AmeriChicks, will be doing every afternoon, Monday through Friday, 5 to 6, is looking at issues that are should be on that busy person's radar, looking at these issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, and then some great human interest stories. So tomorrow, we're going to have William Perry Pendling with us. He is with the Mountain States Legal Foundation. And it's going to be a really interesting conversation. So we'll talk to you tomorrow at 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. So this is the AmeriChick signing off. Y'all have an awesome night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. About 13.